So you've come here for the truth. Well, we've got the truth and nothing but the truth. Here are your hosts, Robert A. Bianchi and David J. Bruno.
Welcome to WMTR Radio. It's nothing but the truth with your host, Bob Bianchi, Dave Bruno. Two lawyers, show about mindset, mental health, addiction issues, not just about the law. And Dave, today we kind of got like a little bit of a hybrid here, a little bit of law, a little bit mental health and addiction counseling. You got us another great guest from a very well-known institution that does such great work for us lawyers in New Jersey.
Without a doubt, attorney wellness is a big part of the conversation here at the Bianchi Law Group and publicly. Today, we're joined by Nicole Persky, the administrative director of the New Jersey Lawyers Assistance Program. She is a graduate of Rutgers University School of Law. Nicole's journey has taken her from a practicing bankruptcy attorney, a suspended attorney, to supporting the well-being of the legal professionals. With her legal background and a passion for helping others, Nicole now focuses on assisting individuals with substance abuse, mental health and family concerns in the legal community. Her work involves developing programs and resources to promote lawyer and judicial well-being across New Jersey. And just for everybody listening, the New Jersey Lawyers Assistance Program is 30 years old, not to be confused with the benefit services of the New Jersey State Bar Association. So there are many ways to get help if you're struggling as an attorney. But this particular program, the New Jersey Lawyers Assistance Program that Nicole's here to talk about, is available to all attorneys throughout the state of New Jersey. So you don't have to be actually a member of the Bar Association like the other programs. So with that being said, Nicole, thank you for coming on Nothing But the Truth. If you could, can you first explain the New Jersey Lawyers Assistance Program?
Well, thank you for having me. What we are is we're a free confidential resource, and we are paid for by when attorneys register, we're paid for by $10 from the registration fee of each attorney annually. You can, you know, get in touch with us by phone, by email, by speaking with one of us at a tabling, et cetera. And we have a variety of resources available. We started out 30 years ago with one person, and we're a staff of seven. And we handle kind of every sort of issue that impacts well-being, from, you know, coming and doing a presentation on general well-being for a law office, let's say, to someone contacting us because, you know, they're looking for some guidance on where to maybe go for treatment. We have a bunch of support groups. One of our more popular ones is Solo and Small Firm Support Group. It's not like a practice-oriented group. It's a group where people talk about their concerns arising from, you know, practicing as a solo or small firm practitioner, because that can be one of the more stressful, types of practice.
So what can I expect if I'm an attorney with a substance abuse problem or a mental health problem that wants to get help and calls your program? What can one expect from that initial consultation or conversation, and where do we go from there?
Well, I guess it depends on, you know, where you're at, right? And your willingness and readiness. But what you can expect is to speak with someone who's going to be non-judgmental, who either understands or is aware of and, you know, trained. We have a psychologist on staff. We have multiple attorney counselors, a variety of people who are trained and ready to, you know, handle the call. And, you know, at minimum, we're going to say, hey, you know, here's some LCL meetings, which are Lawyers Concerned for Lawyers meetings. They're essentially attorney AA or 12-step meetings. And maybe, you know, go check one of these out. Here's someone in your county who might be a good person to talk to. Or maybe it's a more, you know, the person's further along and they're ready to go somewhere. We're going to discuss with them, you know, where their insurance might take them for treatment, that kind of thing. So, and, you know, help kind of guide them through that process and make the calls and do the things.
Yeah. Well, I applaud the work that your program's doing. And I applaud you as well, because you have a very unique story. You graduated from law school. You were a practicing bankruptcy attorney. And then you had to deal with some struggles and challenges in your own life with substance abuse. Can you tell us about that, those struggles, and the transition from practicing attorney to wellness advocate?
Okay. So I wasn't initially prepared to tell my story today, so I'm going to be like kind of a little all over the place. But my journey, I guess, wasn't that straight across. I graduated law school at 23. I went to Penn State undergrad, and I got done law school in like 2.5 years. I went to Rutgers, Camden. I didn't particularly like it. I'm like a multi-generational attorney, so it was kind of one of those things, you're going to go to law school. It was kind of, I don't think I ever even thought it was going to be anything else. So I went to law school, got it done, wasn't real hard, but I wasn't really prepared for the challenge of the bar exam. That was a little harder. And I decided, you know, I don't know what I want to do for a while. So moral of the story, it took me a while to come around to be an attorney. And in the interim, you know, my drinking, which wasn't great growing up, I mean, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there. There was a DUI, but I'm like, oh, well, people get DUIs, it happens, you know, and the drinking was, you know, all the right places, right? Going out to events and, you know, for example, when I was clerking, I would go to the young attorney events and have only two drinks there because that's what you're supposed to do. And so I'm thinking my drinking's not a problem. But, you know, I'm starting to have some issues. You know, maybe I black out one time, but that happens. And, you know, people black out. They're not supposed to, by the way. And kind of minimizing the consequences. And I didn't really acknowledge that as being an issue until I encountered practicing law, right? And you can't go to court hungover. You can't pass the character and fitness, you know, having a problem. And the questions had not been changed yet. And that was an issue. Around the same time when I'm going through all of this and I'm ready to really start practicing and bunkering down, I'm prescribed pain medication for an infection in my foot. And that was just perfect. Right? I didn't have to worry if my drinking's a problem. I didn't have to worry if I'd smell like alcohol. You know, maybe, you know, Sunday I went for, you know, Sunday fun day or whatever the case may be, because I had no desire to drink. And it just, I just thought it was the, you know, greatest thing. And I didn't see it really being the issue. And, there was other afflictions I had, and that whole situation got extremely ugly. I could talk for the next 2 hours. bad. Opiate addiction is not pretty, and especially because it sneaks up on you. And it's easy to hide until it's a major problem. And, you know, on the outside, I'm doing everything right. You know, I'm hitting all the marks. And court, I'm doing great. I'm going to court. I'm getting pointed out as like, oh, look at that. You know, do it that way almost, right? And to make a long story short, I ended up getting, you know, pulled over with, you know, controlled substance in my car. And that was the beginning of the end of me using. At the time, I thought it was the worst thing that had ever happened to me. my life is over. This is horrible. You know, no responsibility, right? Because you've justified, or I've justified this behavior to myself for so long. And I ended up going to recovery court. And as I'm about to kind of plead into it, and I don't know criminal law very well, I never practice it. I did like one DUI with my old boss. But my attorney looks at me and says to me, "You're going to die. And I'm going to go for a ride on my bike this afternoon. It's a very nice day. I'm going to go ride on the boardwalk," or something like very much along those lines. And the fact he said it like very plainly somehow got through, because people had said things to me in very dramatic, emotional, concerned manners. And I was like, wow. And so that was May 9th, 2017. And it's October 9th, 2024. So I have 7.5 years in November.
Sober.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations, Nicole. Thank you. You know, you were a practicing attorney at the time. And by the way, the story about the pain medication, I think, hits a lot of people. It's a very, very common story that we see in the criminal justice system, both as prosecutors and defense attorneys. I unfortunately have a very good friend that died of an overdose with the start of an addiction with pain medication as well. Was that at all correlating to the pressures as an attorney, or do you feel that that was not together? They were separate.
At the time, I would have thought they were separate, but absolutely together. It gave me more. I thought I figured out a life hack. Like, I have more hours in the day. I can concentrate better. You know, I don't care that I'm missing things, right? I don't care that my friends are doing something, or, you know, I can't go to a family event because it didn't bother me as much. And it absolutely was correlated.
Wow. All right, we're listening to WMTR Radio's Nothing But the Truth of Bob Bianchi, Dave Bruno. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
At the Bianchi Law Group, our team of former prosecutors and certified criminal trial attorneys specialize in criminal defense and domestic violence cases. When you need a law firm with courage, compassion, and the commitment to fight for you, call the Bianchi Law Group today.
Okay, welcome back to WMTR Radio's Nothing But the Truth. Nicole, thank you for sharing that. And what I love about your story is through this trauma, and first of all, most people never get help. My experience with lawyers is that they will suffer in silence because there's an ethos, there's a mentality. We say we want attorney wellness, but in truth, you're considered, it's not good. You have to be in control. You have to be in control of yourself. You have to be in control of your client. You have to be in control of the situation. You sought help, and now you are with the New Jersey Lawyers Assistant Program as the administrative director of that program. So you took that pain and turned it into something positive to help other people. That's an awesome story. Can you talk to us about how that happened?
How did that happen? Well, I guess it was sort of roundabout. I was asked to share my story at Recovery Summit, which is an annual event we have. It's going to be December 9th this year, fourth annual. And I came and shared my story at that event. And when a position opened it was actually an office administrator position opened. And oddly had a set of skills that at the time I was looking to use. And I have a young daughter, so I was kind of re-entering the workforce. My daughter's 7. And the opportunity arose kind of at just the right time, and kind of aligned with, you know, someone taking a chance on me. And just everything kind of lined up. And, you know, I really love working here. I love the work we're doing. you know, the opportunity we have to keep helping the legal community and to work with people.
Does your story help at all? Maybe not. Those lawyers who may be reticent to call in the first place, but take that jump, take that leap of faith and dial into you. Do they know about this story? Does it help them, or does it help you inform them?
I spoke at the Mente conference that the Hispanic Bar Association had in May. And I, you know, published that article, and I've shared at a couple different, you know, county bar associations, and I've had a couple people, you know, comment on it when they call. You never know, like, someone may hear something from us and call someone else, or, you know, I think even just destigmatizing it, right? Having the conversation and saying, you know, I'm an addict and I got help and it's okay. There's life afterwards, you know? I think that's helpful, even if it doesn't directly correlate to, you know, instant response, right?
Sure. Sure. I mean, Dean Graziosi always says your mess is your message. Your journey, your persistence through the challenges puts you in a perfect position to relate and understand problems as they come through. And I wonder, in the position that you're in, what do you believe some of the most common challenges facing lawyers and judges in terms of mental health and well-being are?
Some of the most common challenges, do you mean like specific items, like, you know, less?
Well, you're running this program, right? And you're getting, you know, many, many different calls, and without getting into confidential communications, but I mean, what are some of the most widespread and familiar issues that are reoccurring in the program?
I mean, you know, obviously stress and anxiety, attorney burnout is a common, you know, it's not a clinical term, but that's a common issue. We have people, gambling's becoming a bigger issue, particularly in New Jersey, and, you know, with the advent of the, you know, online gambling, all the sports betting, right? You know, substance use disorder, obviously, alcohol. You know, people are calling about things that for their well-being too, which is great. Proactive measures, career concerns. We get people who contact us that aren't exactly sure where to go, whether that be, you know, transition. Some people aren't sure if they're ready for retirement, or maybe they're not happy where they're at. And some of the calls we get that are, you know, depression, anxiety. So we get a variety of different calls. And we now have the third party rule. So someone can contact us on behalf of another person, and that came out in December. So we're happy that, you know, that gives us another opportunity to contact people who maybe need a support.
So I'm going to be super lawyer about this, super legally lawyer. So I guess one, from a clinical perspective, is treating an attorney, if you know, different than there would be other professions. In other words, I think what Dave was trying to get there is, are there unique stressors or unique things that are endemic to attorneys? And two, do you have virtual meetings? And three, I'm sorry to load you up with questions. Three would be, is there any possibility, even by way of subpoena, that the fact that somebody consulted with you or is utilizing your services could be revealed? These are all things that I'm thinking attorneys would be asking.
Okay. So I'm going to go to, yes, virtual meetings that were covered under 128B with respect to confidentiality. So our records, you know, knock on wood, in 30 years, we haven't had someone able to subpoena them. They're covered by confidentiality rules.
Yeah, but let me just stick with that confidentiality. Yeah, that's really amazing to hear, because I have Dave and myself have unfortunately represented lawyers who have fell on the other end of the addiction curve and are in criminal trouble or licensure, you know, issues, you know, similar to yourself. And I'm wondering, it's never happened, but if a client wants to make an argument on a post-conviction relief application or on appeal that my lawyer was not mentally capable of representing me to their fullest because of their addiction issue, whatever, and I want all treatment records. So that's kind of the reason I went to that spot. I was wondering if
I mean, wouldn't their treatment records be covered under 42 CFR also?
I don't know. I mean, I know that we get treatment records all the time that are reviewed in camera by courts, but, you know, anyway, that was one issue. And the other issue is from a clinical perspective.
It's my understanding, and, you know, I don't practice this kind of law, but it's my understanding that, you know, records pertaining to substance use have a higher level of confidentiality, but we're not clinical. So I don't see, you know, our records being reviewed in that way. And we wouldn't, I mean, I don't know that it would be, someone's coming here for support and assistance. So the fact that someone was coming here to bolster their well-being, I don't know that that should be adversely, you know, viewed, right?
Oh, I'm not. The world is as it is. It's a broken world. I'm not disagreeing with you, but okay. When you say you're not clinical, does that mean there's no treatment modality there, or
that means that, you know, you can speak with one of our attorney counselors, or again, we have a psychologist on staff. But what it is you'll have a short term, you know, counseling with them that is not essentially psychotherapy. They'll help, you know, issue spot, help you figure out problem solve. Okay, maybe you need a therapist. You know, maybe the issue is something where you do want to change careers, and it's not the type of thing where a therapist will necessarily be helpful. So it's a little different than, you know, a traditional situation where you're going to call up and you're going to get therapist X, right? Yeah. It's a different kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a starting place for attorneys that have concerns. This is a great conversation for awareness. Because especially recently, the New Jersey Supreme Court has an initiative. The State Bar Association has an initiative with benefit packages. And you and your program are out there as well. So wherever anyone needs to go, there are places to go. And that's the conversation. You know, because Bob, to me, attorneys are, they need help because of what we do. We are servicing people in our professions, and we are dealing with people's problems. When anybody comes to our law firm, and many of the lawyers and law firms out there, when that phone rings, the prospective clients and our clients, they have problems. They need help. And some deal with other issues, like the matrimonial attorneys. We deal with them pretty frequently with custody issues and addiction issues and the divorce issues. Attorneys,
the vicarious trauma that you're dealing with just through the trauma your client's going through. And then, you know, you have the fact that your behavior, right, and how much you prepare is going to impact the outcome. So are you ever doing enough, right? And they have that weight. So, I mean, as a profession, they have a lot on their shoulders. We have a lot on their shoulders.
Yeah. Oftentimes when I get on stage, I ask the crowd, who here deals with clients that have problems? And inevitably, everybody raises their hand. And then I say, all right, everyone put your hands down. Now, who has their own problems and adversities and challenges? And, you know, everyone could raise two hands, because that sometimes bleeds into the lawyers' lives, too, when we deal with other people's problems. So that is why this conversation and awareness is so important. And that's why we appreciate this program and all the others and the benefits around the state of New Jersey. Bob, we are coming to an end.
Yes.
This did go quick, Nicole.
Yeah. Well, Nicole, I want to thank you for your inspirational story and the work that you're doing for us lawyers here in New Jersey. But you're listening to WNTR Radio. It's the truth with Bob Bianchi, Dave Bruno. The radio show is at 9:30 on Saturdays. Dave, podcast.
Sure. The podcast drops on Wednesdays. But where you could find this interview, the podcast episodes, and video, we're taking video as we always do here,
nothingbutthetruthpodcast.com, where you can see this interview, many others, and also live stream on Saturdays if you can't get to the WMTR radio on time, Bob. So that's where we're at. That's where you can find us, and that's where you can find Nicole and this exceptional interview. Once again, thank you for coming on. Thank you for sharing your story and providing the benefits that you guys do for the last 30 years, assisting attorneys. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We're the Bianchi Law Group, a team of former prosecutors and certified criminal trial attorneys.
But here's the thing. He put himself in a box when he said my
relied on by CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, Law and Crime, and news leaders across the country for our criminal defense expertise.
In a search warrant, you have to have probable cause that a crime's been committed and there's evidence in a particular place.
When you need a law firm with courage, compassion, and the commitment.